I'm Steve Lascalzo, and this is The Way. Welcome to another recap and discussion of Obi-Wan Kenobi. If this is your first time joining me, thank you so much. I take notes moments after watching and produce a quick reaction podcast, if you're interested in hearing that sort of thing. It should be the episode of This Is The Way podcast right before this one, number 83. Both that First Thought episode and this one have details about Part 5. So if you have not seen Episode 5 of the show, please go watch and then come back. This is the way, I warn you. See what I did there? If you're caught up, let's keep going.
This is the way.
This is the way. This is the way.
Part 5 is directed by the showrunner Deborah Chow, just like all the rest. She'll be in that director's chair for all 6. I truly felt this episode was the best of the series so far. But that's a relative term, isn't it? I think there have been some really silly mistakes. Ones made setting up the camera shots, some atrocious mistakes in the script, and some of the acting is, well... According to a friend of mine, bad even for Star Wars. Now, I don't know if I agree with that. Those are his words, not mine. The writing credits for the series as a whole are pretty complicated. Not for this episode. No, for Part 5, it's just written by Joby Harold and Pixar's Andrew Stanton. This episode's script was one of the best, and it had some of the best storytelling devices. I don't mind telling you that I'm assuming that that's the work of an established name like Stanton and not Harold. And I base that on the first 4 episodes, and especially the last 2, where Harold and Hannah Friedman were writing. Now, I'm not an expert, but I am a writer. Harold has been defending himself in interviews the past 2 weeks. The writer doth protest too much, methinks. One of the worst excuses I've been hearing in his defense is, you know, just wait and see, it'll all work out. We know the Grand Inquisitor wasn't dead. You had all the characters pretending he was. We guessed that Reva was one of the younglings. You waited way too long to show us why we should care, though. We know Leia and Ben and Luke make it out alive. You can't keep putting them through increasingly dangerous situations and not expect us to question why none of that ever came up. Disney chose to go with this time period, and I think, to a person, we were all on board with the fake-out that they pulled with us, thinking it would be keeping Luke safe, and then instead giving us a Leia rescue. It's just being executed poorly. My hope is that since Stanton will also have a hand in writing on the finale as well, we'll see more of this polished product that we saw in this episode, rather than the one we saw in the first 4 episodes.
Yeah. Good.
The runtime shows up as 43 minutes in parentheses on the Disney Plus show page, but that's not what it takes if you're just interested in action. There is a previously on montage after the Disney Plus snap, just like every other show so far except for the first one. Well, and that one had, you know, the recap of the Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith in it. There's also the Lucasfilm Limited and Star Wars title screens, and then the Obi-Wan Kenobi sand title sequence. And the action runs 34 minutes, 17 seconds from Coruscant to young Luke in bed. The thumbnail description available on the show's Disney Plus episodes tab reads, Imperial forces attempt to draw Obi-Wan out. The episode description on the show's page when you select that episode, it reads, Obi-Wan plans his next move as the Empire, closing in, tries to draw him out. Now we've reached the cast section and we start with the obvious choice, the one that, let's be honest, after all the stuff he's been into, how does an underworld figure like Darth Maul not hear about this guy resurfacing, especially since the events of Solo took place not too long ago?
Kenobi.
Kenobi!
Ewan McGregor is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and yes, how does Darth Maul not hear about this going on?
Hello there.
Vivian Lyra Blair plays the daughter of Padme Amidala and Anakin Skywalker, adopted by Bail and Breha Organa, Princess of Alderaan.
I'm just Leia.
Moses Ingram plays the third sister, Reva. I truly believe Harold did a disservice to her by not including more of her backstory earlier in the series. He's the one that took over for Hossein Amini and Stuart Beatty. As it is, too little, too late. It's really a shame because I think activists claimed it was racism and not just poor writing and poor acting. I'm pretty sure that if even more of her flight through the Jedi Temple was shown throughout parts 2 through 4, I still feel this is a bad character. Rupert Friend's absence from the last two episodes did something similar for me. Not showing him recuperating didn't make his return more surprising. All it did for me was put his return in the spotlight more. And that made me look at Friend's acting, and I feel he fell victim to that same mustache twirl overacting. I saw someone say the overacting fits Star Wars, a different Friend. But I don't think for one second Ian McDiarmid or James Earl Jones was overacting as Palpatine and Vader in the first six movies. So I can only guess that most of these people that find it fun are more interested in the animated series. If you're judging live action against animated series, well, then we're just not on the same page.
Apologies.
O'Shea Jackson Jr., Colin Roken, Ice Cube's son? I have no idea why I didn't realize that sooner. Roken has been a terrific character, well-received, and it is stone-cold proof, I'm sorry, that it wasn't racism that caused people to reject Reva. Maya Erskine plays pilot Sully Stark. Indira Varma was Tala. I am truly sad we won't see her anymore, but what a heroic ending for her. Kumail Nanjiani is back as Haja, and I liked him a little less this episode, and I can't pinpoint why, except I didn't like Obi-Wan leaving Leia with him, and maybe that's kind of a fatherly thing for me. I'm not saying there were tons of better choices, but it bothered me. Maurice Alvarez gets a credit again, and then the guest starring list, Indy Desroches, is again listed as Corin, and the more I see him and Niche appear, or Niche, whatever her name is, the horns, the less I like them. And the inclusion from Legends materials is a mistake, I think, but it's not my decision to make, obviously. This has got to be Joby Harold or Deborah Chow pushing for that inclusion in canon. Now, I'm going to admit right now, if it's Chow, I'm all right with it. But if it's Harold, I hate it. I don't think he's doing a good job.
If anyone knows anything...
Jimmy Smits appears again as Bail Organa in a holo recording. I think it's a holo recording. It can't be a holo communication, right? It had to be a recording. James Earl Jones is the voice of Darth Vader. Hayden Christensen is not just Darth Vader, but also pre-Clone Wars Anakin as part of a flashback sequence. The Jedi younglings from the premiere episode and first scene are again credited because of another flashback, a continuation, if you will. There is also a listing for the captain of the Devastator that addresses Vader, but he doesn't have a name. The actor has no ties I'm aware of to Marvel, Lucasfilm, or Star Wars, and no, Crispin Belfrage does not appear in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The last listed is also the last to appear in the episode. It's Grant Feely as the sleeping Luke Skywalker. Now, sometimes I list performance artists or stunt performers, especially if there are ties to previous projects, but there are a large number of them. I will recommend you give their names a look in the credits, because some of them, like the performance artist for Darth Vader, have done great work.
Where is he?
Demetrius Bistrevsky first appeared for Lucasfilm as the Quarren trawler that gets cut in half by the door in the opening scene of The Mandalorian, Season 1, Episode 1. That's not his first appearance as Vader, though. That came in a YouTube short for, I guess, his friend Bill Parker in Jedi with a GoPro 2. Think about that for a moment. Guy puts on a Vader suit, and his friend puts a video live in December of 2015. Almost 4 years later, you know, this is a fan film, I think, or maybe a student film. Then he gets a shot at performing for Lucasfilm, and his death is so iconic in the debut scene for The Mandalorian and for Disney Plus, it's featured in all the trailers. The experience that must have been for him. 2.5 years later, he's actually featured as Vader in Obi-Wan Kenobi. Am I jealous? Of course. How, though, can we not be happy for someone with that kind of a journey? Well done, Dimitri. All right, next up will be the recap and discussion, but first we have to deal with these stormtroopers.
You can go about your business.
Move along.
Move along. Move along.
We get the Disney snap, the Star Wars and Lucasfilm slates, the Obi-Wan Kenobi title sequence, and then we're on Coruscant, midday. The camera pulls back and we can tell it's Anakin. He's got his Padawan braid and a ponytail, so this is pre-Revenge of the Sith. In fact, we'll soon see he has both his hands, so this is before the Clone Wars. And I wonder, since he's staring off, if maybe this is after the beginning of the Attack of the Clones, because maybe he's staring out toward Padme's apartment. Now remember, at the beginning of Attack of the Clones, he hadn't seen her for years, so if he knows where she is, then this has to be after the beginning of that movie. He's standing at the Jedi Temple, and I think the implication is that maybe it's the same spot as the Order 66 sequence from the opening of the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. I spent way too much time comparing the buildings that you can see at night with the ones you see at midday. Now, they don't seem to match up exactly, but here's the thing. There's also quite a few years in between this flashback we're seeing and Order 66. So maybe buildings were built or destroyed, and I didn't realize that factor until I had already spent far too much time on it. So what was the point? I really don't know. Obi-Wan finds Anakin and he's got some training in mind, and this is live saber action here. Now, I think Chow should have cut away here when they say let's begin, and then use the circling and the clash of sabers at a later part, but perhaps she tested it in the edit bay and it didn't work that way. When the clash of sabers happens, we're suddenly taken on board the Devastator, Vader's flagship at this point in the timeline. The only way I know this is because the captain that addresses him is credited as Devastator Captain. The Third Sister has been invited on board. She reports that her tracker has worked and that Kenobi is about to land on Jabim. So I suppose the tracker transmits through hyperspace. And it's very clearly called a tracker. Later, it's a restraining bolt. Then again, it's effectively a reprogramming of Lola. This is a weakness in the story, and it's one we're expected to overlook. Even if restraining bolts have been used differently in Legends materials, they haven't been in feature films or television series yet. So I really think Reva should have been reprogramming Lola and then sending that information back through Lola, not through this tracker or this tracking device, and that would pay off her line about having had a droid once. At the very least, it could have played out differently. Because Lola has been Leia's security blanket through the first 4 episodes, and to think she wouldn't have interacted with Lola at all from the time that they got back on that ship or from the T-47 onto the transport, you know, she would have discovered the subterfuge sooner. Vader seems pleased, though, with this report, so he pins Reva with the Grand Inquisitor's pin.
Set a course, Captain. We leave for Jabim at once.
I know he tells her later that he knew, which makes this whole charade even more painfully ridiculous to me. It's not like Vader loves these sycophants or the Grand Inquisitor so much. If he's so single-minded about Obi-Wan Kenobi, do we really feel like he's going to risk letting him go in favor of telling this weakling Reva that she's not worth it, then leaving her for dead? The transport lands in the Jabim cave the path is using, and contrary to what we saw just last episode, there are tons of families and people waiting now to get to safety. Now, I'm not sure it makes sense that you'd have all these people waiting for months to take the same transport out, and we'll see if this transport actually does get to safety next week, I suppose. It certainly makes for a more unifying story, though, that people fearing for their lives would be comfortable waiting to see if a rescue into the lion's mouth for a princess would be successful. And that's what we see. The people are relieved it worked, and Wade's sacrifice, though, pretty much goes unmentioned.
Haja,
What are you doing here?
Obi-Wan notices Haja is now a client of the Path. Ever the con man, he claims he fought Reva in his conversation, but I don't mind a character that stays true to itself. He even draws a comparison between himself and Jedi, saying, now he knows what it's like, but no, you don't. You'd be dead if you were a Jedi, not on the run. I just like the character a little less personally, because he is who he is. He's not pure of heart. It might have been interesting to see Haja interact with Tala here, to see if there was some sort of history there.
Broken. That transport, I need to get her back to Alderaan.
After Haja, Ben sends Leia over to Tala and Ned B while he talks to Roken. Leia meets Neesh and Corran in this moment as well. And again, someone really loved them from Legends. Roken, though, is in the forefront. He's revealing that everyone in the cave basically signed off on helping Obi-Wan rescue Leia. They'd have already been on their way. Well, there was this second ship, right? But okay. I don't think guilt trip is the right thing here, but Obi-Wan is still single-minded. I still really don't know why they didn't immediately head for Alderaan and drop Leia off at the nearest spaceport and then come back to Jabin, except that's what the story wanted. Now, that's a huge tactical mistake if your main concern is actually the safety of Leia. If you're being tracked, that's the sure way to find out, right? Take her right back to Alderaan. They didn't take Tala's plane out, so logically speaking, Leia is the only one who could have had a tracker on her, but they didn't inspect her or anything about her, and that's okay, they got caught up in the moment. But even though this is a weak spot to me in the writing, I won't argue that people do dumb stuff all the time. So bringing her to Jabim first might be dumb, and that's what happens. What it does allow is a sobering up for Obi-Wan. Now his rescue and his mission has a cost, and rather than complain about it, he does what Jedi are supposed to do, and he offers help.
If we cannot break them...
It is not them we need to break.
Vader is staring into hyperspace, and this is the moment I think they could have spliced in the circling of Obi-Wan and Anakin in the flashback right up to the clash. They don't have a flashback here. If they had that moment right before cutting to Vader staring at the revolving blue circle of hyperspace, I think it would have made the episode a little, tiny little bit better. I think also it might have been nice to cut from this scene with Reva to a scene of her as a youngling running from their dead master, then finding themselves in a dead end. Maybe we could have gotten some of their names. Now I realize the writers might have thought they were dropping a revelation on us later in the episode, but I think it would have been better to drop these breadcrumbs.
The light will fade, but is never forgotten.
As usual, I spend far too much time trying to decipher Orabesh when there really isn't anything terribly interesting about what they're writing on the walls here. They don't specifically mention any characters that we know of from the movies, but maybe if you've read some comics or legend materials or some of the new books, maybe there's somebody in there. But it really doesn't matter because the important part is the light fading. Maybe that's a reference to the lead up to The Force Awakens too, right? I like that it could have an echo of a meaning, you know, the light's fading now and then the light fades later so that it can awaken. Not that this is a telling of the future, but only that darkness is the natural state of things. The darkness is the natural state. So if you're biblical in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and there was void and darkness first, until he spoke, let there be light. And he saw that it was good and divided it from the darkness. As a Christian who loves Star Wars, I'm well attuned to the light versus dark themes. I've always felt lightsabers have that way of cutting through the darkness. And they do seem to do good post-rotoscoping. It looks much better in modern Star Wars television films. You know, the moments on Bespin in Empire Strikes Back and the moments in Palpatine's throne room between Vader and Luke are memorable to me because of that light in the darkness. Blue, red, green. Now they use practical effects in the sabers themselves to achieve reflected light, and the sabers glow in the dark in such a fantastic way. It really does remind me how these are elegant weapons for a more civilized age.
He'll attack next. He hasn't the patience for a siege.
How do you know?
Lola closing the doors might have actually served as a helpful warning and a huge tactical error, but again, that kind of goes well with the Empire, doesn't it? All brute force and fear, no real tactical greats. Just ask Admiral Kendall Ozzel, am I right? You know, the guy Firmus Piet replaces after the Battle of Hoth. Now, because of this closure, the people of the Path have precious time to prepare.
Don't grow too aggressive, Anakin. Be mindful. A Jedi's goal is to defend life, not take it.
Mercy doesn't defeat an enemy, Master. Which is why you're gonna lose!
Launch the attack.
Now is when General Kenobi steps back up and back into that leadership role. He gives a speech to everyone and lets them know that they don't have to fight. They just can hold out long enough to flee. That doesn't sound too inspirational, but it is because these are people who already gave up everything for the promise of a new life. Now the warning sirens are blaring. They hear Vader is coming for them. The people get to work, and that gives Deborah Chow and her editors a chance to put together a nice fortifying the base montage. Stormtroopers are setting up a heavy cannon on the door. Years later, Supreme Leader Kylo Ren would start blasting a door, right? And the people inside would look for a way to run from there. Inside, Roken can't get the doors open. I'd imagine they're just trying to get control of them, and not actually leaving them open to be blasted to smithereens from space. So once they get control, they can load up and go. I didn't like the writing here to get Leia involved, and I finally feel like some of my friends have been mentioning that she's been used a bit too much, and I finally feel like maybe that's the case. Now, it's not bad, but it does feel like they're venturing into the heavy-handed with her now.
It's the sister contest.
Obi-Wan, meanwhile, trusts her to Haja, who is very reluctant, and for good reason. He's a con man. If Obi-Wan had maybe mentioned a reward, waiting on Alderaan, maybe this wouldn't have caught me so terribly, but I'm a dad. I still think he should have sought out Tala, put her in charge of Leia. Now, I know the writers wanted her for a different plot point, right? But time and time again, it feels like they're writing to fill gaps in the plot points rather than writing around those plot points to make them fit together. Now, it could have been accomplished by Ben handing her to Tala, and then Tala being asked to come help with something down the tunnel, and hey, you know, Haja, watch her, and I'll be right back. But Obi-Wan trusting Leia to him just does not track for me. Kenobi runs off to the Bacta tank he was brought after Mapuzo to rehabilitate his burns, and then he listens to the worst voicemail message ever conceived. You know what you don't do as a brilliant senator? You don't send an uncoded message with all the important details and have your face on it to a fugitive. This shows you how weak the plot driving has been by the writers. There is no reason for this. Even if it does go through, there's no reason Obi-Wan shouldn't get rid of that message the instant he reads it. There's no way that you would risk the Empire stealing or intercepting that message. This is absolutely atrocious. How do we send Reva after Ben again? There were dozens of other ways this could have been seeded earlier in the season to get her where you needed her. But to me, this just shows stupidity from Bail. This is basically spilling all the important beans in one short message. Could have been intercepted at many points, but then also Obi-Wan could have been dead and his gear intercepted. Could have trusted his gear to this con man, right? And they put it on the floor of a cave that will almost assuredly be combed through at some point. That means Reva finding it is actually the best case scenario for this communicator to be found? Whoa, that's really bad.
You know, I was following orders on Gorel. The Empire said it was a roundup. People not paying their way, taxes for the cause. They lied.
You know what's not awful? Tala. She comes from these same writers. But again, it's as if they had to fill in the gaps between that talk she has with Obi-Wan and the next plot point. And who cares how you do it? Because we have this strong scene and that's all that matters, right? That's the way that Star Wars Twitter seems to see it. I mean, maybe they're right. Maybe all you have to do is string together these moments. Maybe people are fooled by this type of loose writing. I just expect more. Tala's story about seeing atrocities and that turning her into basically a proto-rebel is great. I'm not pretending that's not. This is what we wish more Imperials saw. This is what the Empire so wisely always covers up, right? The media of the Holonet is absolutely on Palpatine's side, aren't they? Garel is a planet we saw in the Clone Wars animated series, so to me, these tie-ins are nice. It's almost like a second reference, you know? And I'll say it again, at the top of the canon chain is the Skywalker Saga feature films, Star Wars stories like Rogue One and Solo, live-action television, then animated movies and series like The Clone Wars, The Bad Batch, Rebels, and Resistance. I would much rather continue to see these lower in the chain canon references be referenced by those higher up than see Legends material entering canon for the first time.
We got a plan B here?
We're going to have to slow them down. Tell the Inquisitor I want to talk.
The thudding of heavy rounds against the blast doors can be heard during Tala's conversation with Ben, but they were getting louder and louder, and soon they're going to breach the doors, so it might have been better just to wait it out. But Obi-Wan, I guess, takes this moment. He senses a moment, perhaps. Then he should talk to Reva. Roken, by the way, is carrying a triple-barreled bowcaster. I did notice that. Reva agrees to talk and approaches the door. They whisper through it, which seemed weird to me. How do you hear each other? But Ben does appear to use the Force when he puts his hand on the door, so maybe he's helping to make the communication possible. I'm going to go with that. Reva says stalling won't help, but yeah, stalling for time absolutely is helping. And that's what he's trying to do. Obi-Wan asks the question and we get an answer, but did any of the clone troopers in the 501st address Anakin as Lord Vader?
You knew who Vader was. Back on Dayu, how did you know that?
I mean, sure, Reva knows Anakin turned, right? She saw him and his face stabbed and, you know, he stabbed her. But maybe there's some sense of the Force where his Force signature confirmed for her that, yeah, I remember this feeling of Anakin stabbing me, and then I feel that same presence when he was fully decked out in Vader's black uniform. So there's enough of a gray area. But you could have just thrown in one line from a clone trooper. Lord Vader, shall we execute them? Or something like that. Kenobi here is rapidly putting things together, maybe through a better mastery of the Force, but it's uncanny how he guesses now that she's hunting him, not serving him. I mean, I'm going to respect Obi-Wan's Force use, right? That's how I'm going to allow this. He offers help. She pointedly asks, do you want Anakin dead? Is that really what you want? So Obi-Wan once thought as Luke did, this must confirm that this only refers to pre-Mustafar, right? The third sister says she was weak, but now she's strong, and she didn't need anyone then, and she doesn't need anyone now.
I don't need your help. I don't need anyone.
You won't stop him alone.
You have no idea what I've done alone.
Negotiations are done. She plunges her saber through the door, cuts the metal bar holding the door together, throws open the doors with the Force, and Obi-Wan Force pushes her back into the squad of troopers. Pew, 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 pew. Shooting starts. Obi-Wan busts out. Old Blue starts deflecting blaster bolts back. The defenders have to fall back, and I noticed Obi-Wan helped out a couple of people, including Neesh Corrin, who was shot in the chest, but she's still alive. I know she's a mother, but what are the parents doing on the front lines here? And she gets shot in the chest? She survives? In the continuing action, Ned B gets shot, so does Tala, in the belly, right at the waistline. Obi-Wan was able to save Neesh, but he can't get to Tala, can't force pull her to him, can't help her throw the grenade or the thermal detonator into the small opening of the cave or bring down Rock. No, I know. This is in service of a cool death, so you have to allow it, right? Indira Varma as Tala Durith has a cool Star Wars death. I'm not going to take that away from her, but down goes one of the better characters to emerge from the show, and she does it on her own terms, setting off the classic thermal detonator, just like we saw Leia threaten Jabba with in Return of the Jedi.
Stop! May the Force be with you.
There's this emotional moment, and I'm not sure what to make of the comedic timing that happens while Obi-Wan is processing this death of Tala's. So Roken says, please tell me we're close to Haja. And then he asks Leia, are we close? She says, I'm working on it. And then he repeats what we can all hear. So I don't know why this gear shift was needed when the next scene we're back to Vader.
Kenobi is already ours.
There's no way out, Master. Admit you are beaten.
What is it? What's wrong?
It's over.
Vader, informed that the doors have been breached, feels like it's over. He feels it's all over. Obi-Wan later echoes that sentiment exactly. Now, I know, the point is kind of that Vader's not learning tactical lessons, but Obi-Wan tells Roken that Anakin expects him to surrender. How does Obi-Wan know that Anakin will only remember the first part and not what happens at the end? But never mind that. Why does he think surrender's the surest bet? I feel like the writers wrote themselves into this corner here, and they needed Obi-Wan to escape on the same ship, and because of the way the flashback is paralleling the action in the present, they needed us to see that even though each of these men, Anakin and Obi-Wan, are thinking about the same duel on Coruscant, they're remembering different parts at different times. They're not even aware that the other one is remembering it, right? Obi-Wan remembers his Padawan is headstrong and reckless. Vader, Anakin, remembers he's more talented with the Force. Kenobi giving himself up didn't have to include handing over all of his stuff to Haja. I'm still not quite sure that this was more than a gesture, unless Obi-Wan's plan was for a last-minute leap on board. Now, certainly, he can't carry his weapons out there with him, but neither did he need to leave them with, again, a con man.
Inform Lord Vader. Kenobi is ours.
Kenobi, McGregor, on his knees, is acting twice as big as Reva, Ingram, on her feet. Then again, he gets stone-cold lines like, you're not bringing me to him, I'm bringing him to you. I think that's great, and I think his appeal to her about not killing families is quite dumb, though. She's an Inquisitor. She's done this. She kidnapped an innocent child, as far as she knew, in Leia, so yeah, absolutely she would let Vader do it all again. She has done it. But at any rate, Obi-Wan points out to her that Vader's so focused on him that it's going to work. That's simply him playing on the Sith's or Darkseid's desire for revenge. So if that's the case, then Kenobi is straight up using her. He's not appealing to any light left in her. If he was trusting her, he would be foolish. But so would she if she trusted him. So it's the will of the Force, then, for him to get sent into the cave under the guard of just two stormtroopers.
There. Your weapon's gone. It's over.
Your need for victory, Anakin, it blinds you.
Then we see more of the duel, up to Obi-Wan losing his weapon and Anakin thinking he's got the upper hand. It's over, he tells him. Obi-Wan even tells him in this portion of the flashback that his need for victory blinds him. This is like if Anakin had remembered right up to the part where Obi-Wan says, don't try it, I have the high ground, and then forgot what happened next. Maybe that would be worse. Okay, that would be worse, right? But it's kind of the same thing. Obi-Wan is not secure just inside. Vader pursues through the tunnels just as Leia manages to discover evil Lola, deprogram her by, well, just removing that tiny restraining bolt with her fingers. Then she uses her as a flashlight, which they didn't give her when she went up the ladder, right? But also, she didn't think before going up, hey, you know what might be useful? Lola. So, anyway, she finds a loose cable, puts a tool somewhere in the thing, and opens the doors. I mean, okay. No one had a better idea, so this is what happens. It's not great. But, I mean, the action in a few minutes really wipes all this stuff away, doesn't it? The opening of the door springs people into action, and I'm cool with the way the scenes are shot to fool us, because the closer ship does not have people running on board, although I think you could have just not shown them stopping right in front of it, and you could have still fooled us. I really, really think how clumsy Haja is here. Obi-Wan is back by this point, right? But Haja is so panicked that he just starts running and drops the communicator, and he even looks back at it. It's not like he did it and didn't know. He just leaves it? Look, if you can't write a believable scene for him to lose this communicator, then don't write him to be the one to lose it. I'll give the writers credit with something here, though. That awful, terrible scene is almost immediately covered up by Vader. Isn't it? I mean, here again. This is stupid. And then give the monkeys what they want. He walks through the tunnels and doors. He sees the nearest transport taking off. This is almost Rogue One hallway awesome. So now he's on the ground. So he's not in the hangar like in Rogue One. So he really couldn't grab the Tantive or Tantive E4. He knows he can exert himself here. So he pulls this ship to the ground. He does it. He rips it apart just in case they thought they could get it running again. But nobody's inside. He missed the ship in the corner, just like we all did the first time we watched it. Pulling back the ship, I do believe would have taken enough out of him for him not to be able to do the same thing to the ship that's further away in the hangar. But what's the Devastator doing up in orbit there? A ship leaves the planet without getting fired upon? I mean, there were life forms on board this time, right? I know Roken says they're being followed, but...
You're a great warrior, Anakin. But you'll need to prove yourself as your undoing. Until you overcome it, a Padawan you will still be.
Now Vader remembers the last part of that duel. He is still the learner and he knows it. But he also knows something else. Reva is stalking him and she is not on his level in any way, shape, or form. Her feeble attempt to attack him from behind is thwarted by a cool, calm response of the Force.
He was wise to use you against me.
The fight is absolutely what Vader fans expect. Reva is no match for him. Vader doesn't even draw his own saber. He calmly dodges or just uses the Force to prevent her from dealing a blow. She gets frustrated, uses her double blades first, then she gets frustrated some more and starts spinning them. It's supposed to be scary, right? It's supposed to scare your opponent. Well, she's the one who's scared. Vader disarms her with the Force, and instead of ending her right there, he breaks her spinning double-bladed saber into two parts and tosses it to her like an Old West knife fight. I think I've even convinced myself that later on, Vader tosses away his half on purpose during the duel, just to give her some false hope. Because a moment later, once again, he disarms her with the Force, then pulls the second blade back to himself to dual wield, points those sabers right in her face. A little reminiscent of his old Padawan snips, right? He gave her a chance. No more. As he walks up to her, she flashes back to that fateful moment in the Jedi Temple. It's not his flashback this time. It's from her point of view, 10 years ago. He stabs her in the same way. But this is no coincidence.
Did you really believe I did not see it, youngling?
Let me tell you what they should not have done here. having the Grand Inquisitor walk in implies to me that he and Vader were in cahoots somehow, and I just don't think Vader cares that much, or should. I'd have preferred to just not have this scene at all and have Vader leave her there, because I feel like the Grand Inquisitor's line about revenge ends up falling flat because he doesn't personally take any revenge. It also seemed like terrible acting to me, but again, I feel like that's the direction that was given to him. Now, I'm not saying it excuses it for him, Rupert Friend, or for Moses Ingram. I just feel like someone somewhere was saying, you know, really ham it up here. Really give it to him.
Revenge does wonders for the will to live, don't you think? Your rage was useful. Now it is tiresome. We will leave you where we found you, in the gutter where you belong.
Then they leave? They leave her? You're gonna walk away from someone who just lived through a saber stabbing, and we just pointed out that now she wants revenge again, and you're just gonna leave her? What's worse to me is the writers are still trying to use Reva. They're still trying to find something for her to do. She's the one that finds the dropped communication. Okay, wait. First, she grabs for her lightsaber. I don't mind that at all, because again, dark side force users, they're all about power, and that might make her feel safe. But then, I just don't like any part of this development where she finds this communicator. She has to die now. Absolutely. I mean, she was going to die right there on the floor, but now there is no scenario that Reva can escape with her life. There's no way that you can turn her and have her know this information. She cannot know this information and live. Garbled or not, she cannot know Tatooine Owen helped the boy. She cannot know it's Bail Organa of Alderaan. She just cannot be trusted with this information in the Star Wars universe. It would be a tremendously bad mistake. And I think it's an unforgivable one if Joby Harold intends to do that. What's worse, this is a lame attempt at the 11th hour to once again imply danger where there cannot be. Luke is an unknown in A New Hope, in the first Star Wars movie. And I read Princess of Alderaan. There's no mention of any of this stuff happening. I know it was written before the show. That's not my decision. Leia and Luke, they're best as little Easter eggs. They shouldn't be major, and in Leia's case, major repeated plot points. Once again, there's also a perfect moment for a bad feeling about this quote from Ben on the transport, but no joy for us. Roken is looking at Kenobi, and it must be really assuring, right, to see a Jedi sitting there, right next to him, white as a ghost. Someone decided that just in case we didn't get the stakes, there should be this scene taking us back to Tatooine at night to the Lars homestead, right into Luke Skywalker's room where he's sleeping soundly.
He's found. If he's learned of the children. Well, then, Tatooine. Owen.
Part 5 to me is the best of the episodes so far, but I think that's because the storytelling devices were better. And I'm attributing that to Stanton. I am also just a sucker for Vader doing awesome stuff. Were there problems? Sure. The Grand Inquisitor's return should never have played out like it did. Vader's still hunting Obi-Wan, and we don't need this extra imaginary threat to Luke. Reva's backstory should have had tracks throughout the previous episodes. Her story should be over now. Now, those suggestions of mine would make the show better fit with canon, but that's not what Disney cares about here. My way's not the only way, but I feel like it's appropriate for me to gauge my excitement for the show pre-release with the excitement now post-release and then post-social media controversies and conversations. I don't think there's any of you listening to my podcast that would qualify for being one of the toxic fans. But maybe that's because I don't have thousands of fans. I'm a little afraid of what the last episode's going to contain. Because on the one hand, this is designed as a limited series. So all the plot points have to be resolved in a satisfactory way, or it just brings up questions that we don't need as fans. The toxic fans seem to scoff whenever you bring canon up. But I draw the comparison to Marvel's first few phases here. If those stories didn't connect and those stories didn't hold true what others established, then the impact of Endgame does not happen as big as it does. You know, look at how well Spider-Man No Way Home was received. And it tied in canon from three different universes. I don't feel Disney has curated Star Wars correctly. So the finale of Obi-Wan worries me. There is still time for woke Disney to rear its ugly head. There's still time for Disney to forget about canon. There's still time for Disney to deliberately ignore canon. The writing hasn't been good. Yeah, the acting of Ewan McGregor has. Vader looks awesome. And I will admit the action has outweighed my issues with the decisions writers gave him. Tala, Roken, Sully, Wade, even the silent Ned B were great. They, you know, their stories impacted me. Haja and Vec veered into the sequel era Star Wars villains, where some aren't so bad, and they really were not good compared to our classic OT and even prequel era's villains. Leia was a breath of fresh air until she wasn't. The Inquisitors don't seem to fit the universe, and I'm going to make the statement here that I thought the animated versions of the characters seemed more believable to me. I've decided that I'm going to be satisfied if Disney just doesn't screw things up in the landing, rather than hope for greatness, and then I end up leaving the series on a low note. The next episode, part 6, the finale, is going to start streaming Wednesday, June 22nd, 3 a.m. Eastern, midnight Pacific. I'll again make an effort to have a First Thoughts podcast ready that morning, then a recap and discussion episode after, and we'll see if I fit in maybe somehow, maybe even, you know, I haven't done a news update for June, but I'm not sure I'm going to need to. I mean, the Star Wars Celebration was in May, and a lot of people have caught up on all that news, and there hasn't been much except for Obi-Wan. We'll see. You can send feedback or comments, email to thisistheway@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at thisistheway@pod or on facebook.com/thisistheway@pod. And our Linktree site has all the links at linktr.ee/thisistheway@pod. Thank you for joining me today. I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo, and this is the way. May the Force be with you always.